2 weeks lead time. I'm Victor Takeoff.
I'm Vajra Kilgour.
I'm Tennille Peters.
Peace and justice.
Thank you so much for your concern, and thank you for your love. You are tuned to listener-sponsored, commercial-free, community radio WBAI in New York at 99.5 FM. Coming up at 6 p.m. will be a report of the day's news with the WBAI news team. 49 degrees at 5 p.m. Stay tuned for Taking Aim with Ralph Schoenman and Maya Schoen.
This is Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen, coming to you Tuesday, September 10th, 2002. In the immediate aftermath of the attack on the World Trade Center and the Pentagon, authorities were already sounding the alarm that a terrorist network was involved, and they specified Osama bin Laden and Islamic fundamentalists in the Al-Qaeda network. The authorities did not disclose, however, that this very network had been established by the Central Intelligence Agency, and that indeed Osama bin Laden and his associate Gulbuddin Hekmatyar had received $6 billion from the U.S. intelligence agencies, specifically to create a terrorist network, not merely in Afghanistan, but in Pakistan and beyond. Indeed, in Uzbekistan and in Tajikistan and the surrounding area. The authorities were quick to point the finger at a demonic figure. But if we look carefully at the press then and in the years since, we see that, in fact, the U.S. government, its intelligence agencies, and its spokespersons were not telling us the truth. 9/11 is a false flag operation, an intelligence term signifying that the blame is placed elsewhere to cover up U.S. government responsibility. Our program today, 9/11, false flag operation.
Maya, the very category of a false flag operation is central to the understanding of the way in which American capitalism and our ruling class has conducted its politics on an imperial and international scale. Every major war in the history of our country has been arranged with pretexts. The history of U.S. imperialism from the mid-19th century is replete with examples, from the war against Spain and the seizure of Cuba, from the war to obtain the Philippines, from the First World War, from the Vietnam War, from the Korean War, the Gulf War. All of these events are based upon arranged incidents, because a generated policy that reflects decades of preparation for the seizure of resources, for the domination of countries that needed to be subjugated, required acquiescence in the American public. False flag operations, whether it's the Gulf of Tonkin resolution based upon a completely contrived attack upon the United States, which never occurred, whether it's the sinking of the Maine, which has long been established as a blowing up of the very ship by the United States military to create the pretext for war, whether it's Operation Northwoods in 1962, which Maya is going to discuss in some detail, which put on the table the plans to impute to the Cuban Revolution attacks upon the United States, including the shooting down of airplanes and the potential shooting down of the rocket of John Glenn. These were pretexts. These were false flag operations. And today in the New York Times, the lead story by Richard Bernstein, today's date, on Path to U.S. Skies, Plot Leader Met Bin Laden. It's a very long and detailed article, the burden of which is to state that on November 29, 1999, a 31-year-old architectural student in Germany, Mohammed Atta, unknown to the world, but determined to strike an unforgettable blow, met bin Laden. And there, the article proceeds to declaim that Mohammed Atta was the boss of the operation. and that the revelation establishes that he met Osama bin Laden, and consequently we have here the entire apparatus for the events of 9/11. It's a fairy tale. It is a fiction. It is a contrivance. It is a fabrication of the real role of Mohammed Atta and the others who were accused of being hijackers, people who were trained at U.S. military intelligence installations, people who have the hands of U.S. intelligence all over them.
Well, in this article in the New York Times by Richard Bernstein on the path to the U.S. skies, plot leader Myth Bin Laden, Richard Bernstein states, quote, "The general conclusion that can be drawn in all of this is that the attacks last year were the deadly outgrowth of a series of terrorist efforts that began with the truck bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. Again, a false flag operation. But before we go into 1993, as Ralph was mentioning, let's look at a very important false flag operation, Operation Northwoods, 1962, when the Joint Chiefs of Staff, headed by Lyman Lemenser, decided that the best way for the U.S. to attack Cuba was to make it seem that Cuba was attacking the United States. They prepared Operation Northwoods, and it is exposed recently through the documents that are in the National Archive and were released as a result of the campaign to have the documents related to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy come to the fore. And it was written about by James Banford, an ABC producer, news producer for Peter Jennings' World News Tonight, and in a book called Body of Secrets, and we've discussed it over and again on Taking Aim. And in the documents for Operation Northwoods, one of the proposals, quote, "We could blow up a U.S. ship in Guantanamo Bay and blame Cuba." And it goes on, quote, "Casualty lists in U.S. newspapers would cause a helpful wave of national indignation," end quote, such as Ralph was referring to with the sinking of the Maine in the Cuban harbor, in Havana Harbor, as a precursor for the Spanish-American War.
The invasion and capture of Cuba and of the Philippines.
And led by the Hearst newspapers, drumming up the Remember the Maine, Remember the Maine, in much the same way that newspapers throughout the world are talking about invasion of Iraq, terrorist operations throughout the world. So the Joint Chiefs of Staff, now remember, this was all of the Joint Chiefs approved of these operations for Operation Northwoods. The in another of the proposals, quote, "We could develop a communist Cuban terror campaign in the Miami area, in other Florida cities, and even in Washington," end quote. Now remember, the terror campaign, that is what they're talking about, the frame of reference to the to incite the American public, make it seem as if there is a definite attack on all the people here, give up patriotism and everything in order to invade Cuba. So again, we have...
I just want to mention that part of Operation North, which called for the crashing of aircraft into cities in the United States, again, this is to be an American military operation disguised as an attack from Cuba. And they also state, with respect to John Glenn, then astronaut, and his rocket, that if the rocket were to crash, and this is not just idle speculative talk, when the National Security Council and the Joint Chiefs of Staff, each member of whom sign off on this document, talk about the rocket of John Glenn astronaut blowing up, they're not talking about that possibility. They're talking about an operation they would impute to Cuba. And it states explicitly, we will blame it on the Cubans, and we will have the opportunity to invade Cuba. This is the scenario of Operation Northwoods in the Body of Secrets published by James Banford. It is detailed with original documents, signed off by every member of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It is the paradigm. And Operation Northwoods occurs during the period of the Cold War. Without a Soviet Union, the category of terror was contrived. Instead of a Soviet Union and a superpower as an adversary of American imperialism, they contrived the alternative scarecrow for generating trillions of dollars for the Pentagon and for the military budget, the category of terror. Groups of terror all over the world, all of them, by the way, without exception. Groups that were funded by the Central Intelligence Agency and put into place as vehicles for attacking governments and societies that they wanted to undermine.
So now we go up to 1993 and a bombing of the World Trade Center. Much is made in this New York Times article today about it. As it says in their in this investigation that has been taking place since September 11th, quote, in the years since September 11th, investigators have pored over cell phone records, flight manifests, financial receipts, and interviews with captured Qaeda members to develop a richer picture, particularly of how the plot came together overseas. And as I mentioned again, the very next sentence is that the general conclusion that is drawn is that the attacks last year were the deadly outgrowth of a series of terrorist effects that began with the truck bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993.
Indeed, Maya, in the article in today's New York Times by Richard Bernstein, Mohammed Atta, who is called the boss, and thereby the architect for the attack on 9/11 of 2001, is stated to have been in liaison with the Ramzi Youssef and the perpetrators of the World Trade Center bombing in 1993, which is stated to be the event preparing for 9/11. And what is particularly important about this, because they've now, in this article that is leaked and planted on the day before the anniversary of September 11th. And for all the elaboration of this article, the entire gravamen of this piece is to say that in 1999, Muhammad Atta had an audience with Osama bin Laden at the social function. They have nothing on what was discussed. They have nothing about any character of the meeting, whether he passed through in 30 seconds. All they are able to establish is that, and if it's true at all, that he met Osama bin Laden in 1999. And from there, they leap to the view that thereby Atta is the boss of the operation. And they center this on his relationship to the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993. I wrote an article at that time as to what was the nature of the operation. Who are the real terrorists with respect to the event of the World Trade Center bombing in 1993? Emad Ali Salem was an Egyptian intelligence agent, and a long-standing operative of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He conceived of the plan for the bombing of the World Trade Center. He recruited people to it. He wore a wire while discussing the operation. He made transcripts of each meeting, which were then deposited in the offices of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. He consulted with the FBI throughout this provocation, because it was a provocation. He went to the mosque of the blind Egyptian cleric, who himself had been involved in a CIA operation called Operation Cyclone in Egypt, and was conveniently in New Jersey at this time. And now Emad Ali Salem starts to approach young men and propose to them a series of operations, including a potential bombing of a major site, which turns out to be the World Trade Center. For a period of 6 months, the Federal Bureau of Investigation in New York had 50 boxes of documentation, the plans that were advanced by their own agent, the proposal that was made, the funds that were supplied, the materials that were provided, the wire transcript of the meetings and discussions about the planned bombing in 1993. At the time, newspapers made much of the fact that the young driver of the Ryder rental van, who was presumptively carrying explosives to the World Trade Center, went back to the rental agency to ask for a refund, and they made fun of this young man, who quite obviously had been induced to rent the van without any knowledge of the intent. But what we learn and what we documented and what the New York Times and the Los Angeles Times and other established papers confirmed was that the person who secured the van and who made those operations and who organized the apartment where the meeting set up by Imad Ali Salem took place was none other than Guzi Hadass, a well-known Mossad operative. The hand of the FBI and the Mossad is all over the bombing events of the World Trade Center in 1993, and as Ralph Blumenthal wrote in the New York Times at the time, Imad Ali Salem himself, when he was called to account for this, said, well, I tried to tell the FBI that what we should give them was fake explosives. Fake explosives, but I was upset when they didn't listen to me. Ralph Blumenthal in the New York Times quotes Imad Ali Salem as claiming that he engaged in this operation, he set it up, he prepared it for the FBI, but he intended, he said, that they should give fake explosives, not real explosives, and he was annoyed that the FBI didn't approve this. What are we talking about here? Not just a false flag operation, but a staged event. The hand of U.S. intelligence and of the Mossad in the bombing of the World Trade Center in 1993 is indeed the linchpin for understanding, for our understanding of the events of 2001, 9/11. Just as the New York Times says today, it is the predicate for seeing what really is taking place here in the United States with the contrivance of a U.S. Intelligence operation to terrorize the American people and to prepare for a 10-year design to seize Central Asian oil, $5 trillion of short-term profit, is the objective of this particular operation, a continued war for our lifetimes, according to Rumsfeld and Ashcroft. The American people have to be terrorized into acquiescence into such a design on such a scale.
In an exclusive interview with the United Press International and Arnon de Borsgrave, the editor.
Arno de Borsgrave.
Arno de Borsgrave. General...
Arno de Borsgrave is the editor-at-large of United Press International. He's the former editor of Newsweek and the Washington Times, and a man who himself has had connections to intelligence agencies over the years.
Well, in an exclusive interview with him, General Gul Hamid, who is the head of the Pakistani intelligence operation, the ISI, the principal instrument for training, arming, organizing, funding, and running drug operations that brought the Taliban to power, and under the aegis, guidance, and instruction of the Central Intelligence Agency in Afghanistan, a man very familiar with the operations of Osama bin Laden. Well, in this exclusive interview, the fundamentalist general stated that the bombing of the explosions at the World Trade Center in 2001, that it was clear that there was a plot by United States Air Force officers and the Pentagon. Quote, the Twin Towers were first attacked at 8:45 a.m., and four flights were diverted from their assigned airspace. Yet Air Force jets didn't scramble, which would be standard procedure, until 10 a.m. Gul Hamid continues, this smacks of a small-scale Air Force rebellion, a coup, perhaps. Radars are jammed, transponders fail, there is no IFF, that means friend or foe identification challenge. This is an inside job. You saw Bush was afraid, and he rushed to a shelter of a nuclear bunker. He seemed to fear a nuclear situation, like a plant would be attacked. Now, who could this have been? This was hushed up in the investigation, just like the Warren report after the Kennedy assassination, Gul Hamid states. And Gul Hamid goes on and says, quote, let's be serious. The Mossad and its American associates are the culprits. We ask, who benefits from the crime? Israel has a short shelf life before it is overwhelmed by demographics. The Palestinian movement cannot be put down. Israel has now handed to the Bush administration, with its acquiescence, the opportunity for which it has been waiting, to consolidate America's imperial grip on the Gulf and to acquire control of the Caspian Basin by extending its military presence in Central Asia. So this is General Gul Hamid, a man familiar, working hand in hand with the Central Intelligence Agency, speaking shortly after the events of September 11th.
The man who had not only facilitated the creation of the Al-Qaeda network when it was deployed against the Soviet Union and it was intended to destabilize the Central Asian republics then of the former Soviet Union, the man who for the CIA facilitated the creation and the funding and the arming of the Taliban movement in Afghanistan, the man who had inside knowledge of all of these operations and who had a clear understanding of the role of Osama bin Laden, states when describing the events of September 11th, 2001, and the coordination of aircraft, major airlines, to launch such an attack. He says, this is not something that is done from a cave inside a mountain or from a peasant's hovel. Do you seriously think that a bin Laden is able to mount so sophisticated an operation? He says, let us be serious. This, he says, is a false flag operation. A false flag operation. And it is very clear from Gul Hamid that in the interview that he gave in some detail, that the hand that is on this operation of 2001 9/11 is the same that conducted the attack in 1993.
He's very specific. He says, don't believe it. Within 10 minutes of the second Twin Tower being hit in the World Trade Center, CNN had announced that Osama bin Laden had done it. I'm an intelligence, Gul Hamid says. That was a planned piece of disinformation by the real perpetrators. It creates an instant mindset. It puts public opinion in a trance, which prevents even intelligent people from thinking for themselves. Yes, brothers and sisters, thinking for themselves. And that is what we have, over the months on Taking Aim, with all the programs we've been doing about pretext and foreknowledge, with the exposure of the mythology of the anthrax terror attacks, with pea soup of deception about the invasion of Iraq, and so on, getting us to think. Puncturing the balloon, the mythology that is being presented night and day, day and night, throughout the press and throughout the world.
Maya, I have to say that in the discussions about the perpetual war that is now being prepared, the genocidal assault that is about to be launched once again against the Iraqi people, many of the anti-war activists with whom we feel great solidarity and identification and sympathy have been led in our judgment to embrace a fiction. Namely that this is a terrorist attack in 2001 by an apparatus run from Afghanistan by Osama bin Laden. This is not a blowback operation, brothers and sisters. This is not something to which the ruling class in the United States is reacting belatedly. This is, on the contrary, a little operation of units that were completely penetrated and monitored by intelligence agencies over a period of years. This is an operation about which every major intelligence agency was aware prior to its occurrence. The San Francisco Chronicle on the 12th of September 2001 reported in an article with the headline, Willie Brown Got Early Warning About Air Travel, that Willie Brown was scheduled to fly from San Francisco to New York on the morning of the 11th, but received on Monday the 10th a call from what he described as his airport security people advising him not to travel on that day and obliging him to cancel his flight.
Willie Brown is the mayor of San Francisco and had been the speaker of the California Assembly for many, many years.
The article in the San Francisco Chronicle establishes that The mayor received this call but wouldn't disclose its origins, which was said to have been a bit of a mystery, but from high places. And the mayor stated it came from our security people, quote unquote. Reporters speculated that later that this was in fact a heads up from Condoleezza Rice. But it was not only Willie Brown. Former U.S. Secretary of State George Shultz received a State Department memo a week before cautioning that America was going to be the target of a major terrorist attack. In fact, 4 days prior to the attack on New York and Washington, this State Department memo specified that these attacks would be on buildings and coming from extremist groups with links to Osama bin Laden and the Al-Qaeda organization. George Shultz stated, "I don't know what was the intelligence that lay behind the warning, but it was specific, and they had to have some sort of advanced intelligence," unquote. San Francisco Chronicle. In fact, he received a notification on September 7th, a worldwide warning, this from the State Department to its former Secretary of State, George Shultz. And perhaps this was the series that prompted the San Francisco Chronicle to run a story with the headline, "How Could the United States Not Have Known," is the headline, and the article cites the government of India's intelligence services, which had passed on prior to the event all of the specifics about 9/11 to the United States authorities. The government of India, the article states, had intelligence on the precise attacks before they occurred. The Chronicle states that India's intelligence apparatus intercepted communications about the attacks on buildings of September 11th and passed them on to the U.S. authorities. William Sapphire in the New York Times was reacting to the fact that George Bush had done a disappearing act after the attack and then showed up in Shreveport, Louisiana, and after that in Nebraska to secure Air Force Base before going to Washington. He questioned the rationale for this in an article which he called Inside the Bunker. Sapphire was put off by the cover explanation that was given to him, in which the Secret Service and the authorities stated that they had received a warning from the, quote, terrorists, unquote, on Air Force One, that Air Force One would be next. And Sapphire wrote the following: "The most worrying aspect of these government revelations has to do with the credibility of their Air Force One is next message. It's described clearly as a threat. Well, why would terrorists send such a message? More to the point," Sapphire writes, "how did they get the code information, the transponder know-how? How did they establish what he calls their malafides? Their knowledge of the code words," he writes, "of the presidential whereabouts, of the possession of secret procedures, indicates," William Sapphire writes in the New York Times, "that these, quote, terrorists, unquote, have a mole in the White House, informants in the Secret Service, the FBI, the FAA, the CIA. The first thing a war on terrorism needs is an Angleton-type counter-spy," unquote, William Sapphire. At that very time, MSNBC reported that Russian President Vladimir Putin told interviewers for NBC that his government had given specific warning to the United States in the strongest possible terms for weeks of imminent attacks on U.S. airports and government buildings. Russian newspapers, including Pravda, reported that Russian intelligence notified the United States government of the specific attacks of 9/11 and identified 25 pilots trained specifically for what were called suicide missions. That is not all. In France, Reuters reports that an Islamic militant, in receipt of French intelligence reports linking him to these events, was able to describe them in advance on a French radio station. The Frankfurt Allgemeine Zeitung, which is the largest newspaper in Germany, published similar reports of this information in the hands of the German intelligence authorities. It is quite clear that everybody in the world and their intelligence agencies was picking up on something planned in a not very secret fashion, alerting a U.S. government to an operation they obviously had full knowledge of, and transparent that the intelligence agencies of virtually every country, India, France, Russia, Germany, Pakistan, were in full possession of the details of 9/11 and notified the U.S. authorities well in advance of their
attack. And as it came out over the past month through the Phoenix, Arizona memos and the discussions of Colleen Raleigh and also Massawi himself, it is clear that U.S. intelligence had the information, and it had been discussed in the secret councils of President George W. Bush. You are listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen on WBAI 99.5 FM in New York, listener-sponsored radio, and on the Internet at www.wbai.org. You can reach us at Taking Aim, running together, Taking Aim at patbell.net, or at our post office box, Veritas Press, P.O. Box 6345, Vallejo, V-A-L-L-E-J-O, California 94591. Our program today, 9/11 False Flag Operation. Now, it takes more than 1 hour to discuss the events of 9/11, and we highly recommend that you obtain World Trade Center Uncensored History last fall over WBAI. It's available from us at a very special discount this month only, and it goes into all the details about the false flag operation, the actual events, the who's who of the preparations for the World Trade Center attack. That's World Trade Center Uncensored History. 5 hours kept people riveted to their radios waiting for the next installment. Now, one of the pilots who was killed was an American Airlines pilot on the flight that crashed into the Pentagon, and his name was Chick Burlingame. Now, Chick Burlingame had been a Navy pilot flying F-4 Phantom jets in Vietnam and had flown for American Airlines for 28 years and was about to retire in 2002. Now, a friend of his best friend, was Captain Kent Hill. And he, too, was an American Airlines pilot, and he, too, was flying on September 11th, that his plane was going to Dallas. Now, Kent Hill is also a close friend of a former paratrooper, Lieutenant Colonel Don, D-O-N-N, de Grand Pre. And on October 23rd, 2001, Lieutenant Colonel Don de Grand Pre wrote an article which has been over the Internet and was picked up along with a press conference by The News, the largest English newspaper circulated in Portugal, which has been published for 20 years. And the News followed through on the claims of Lieutenant Colonel Don de Pre and Captain Kent Hill, and has been verifying what they have been saying. In fact, what Lieutenant Colonel Don de Grand and Captain Kent Hill, remember, these are former pilots, and Captain Kent Hill is an American Airlines pilot, and what they are doing is they are saying that the fiction, it has to be a fiction about the Mohammed Atta and the other so-called terrorists taking control of these airplanes. What they write, quote, it's stated that all pilots are trained to punch a four-digit code into the flight control's transponder to warn ground control crews of a hijacking, but this did not happen. Captain Hill maintained that the four airliners must have been choreographed by the Airborne Warning and Control System, that's AWACS. The system can engage several aircraft simultaneously by knocking out their onboard flight controls And this is done with EMP, electromagnetic pulsing knocks, at the onboard flight control and communications. So what they are speculating, and they say that this is where all the evidence points, and that's why the planes all took off between 8 and 8:15 a.m., that there must have been an AWACS plane up there in the air that took control, knocked out the transponders, and that someone else was from the ground was controlling those airplanes, because there is no way that the people described, such as Mohammed Atta and the other people who went to flight schools and only learned to fly little Cessnas, there is no way that they have could ever have taken control of those planes. And the conclusion of de Grand Pré and Captain Hill, remember, an American Airlines pilot, former Navy F-4 Phantom jet pilot in Vietnam War, flying over 100 missions, their conclusion, quote, "We must consider that the enemy may well be within the gates," meaning that it is not some outside terrorist operation, but that it is within the Pentagon itself.
That is consistent, Maya, with the revealing interview that was given by Tom Kennedy, who was the director of the FEMA search and rescue teams who were sent to New York, when he told Dan Rather that his FEMA urban search and rescue team had been sent and arrived in New York on September 10th. On September 10th, a day before the events of September 11th. One day prior, FEMA's people were in place in New York City, specific to prepare for the attack on the World Trade Center. And Newsweek, on September 24th of last year, ran an important article which states, on September 10th, Newsweek learned that a group of top Pentagon officials suddenly canceled travel plans for the next morning because of advanced security concerns, unquote. That is Newsweek on September 24th, 2001. And CBS disclosed on September 4th of this year, 6 days ago, quote, CBS News has learned that barely 5 hours after American Airlines Flight 77 plowed into the Pentagon, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld had told his aides to come up with immediate plans for striking Iraq, although there was no evidence linking Saddam Hussein to the attacks. According to notes taken by his aides who were with Rumsfeld, and I'm quoting from CBS, in the National Military Command Center, notes that show exactly where the road to a war with Iraq began, reports CBS News national security correspondent David Martin, these were preparations long in place, and the event of 9/11 was taken as the opportunity to place them into motions. 15 minutes after the hijacked plane had hit the Pentagon, Rumsfeld had put into motion a prearranged plan for preparing an attack on Iraq. This is but the little continuation of the false flag operation designed to service an agenda that was essential to the rules of the society. The seizure of Central Asian oil and natural gas. The unleashing of a $1 trillion continuing budget for the Pentagon that would never have been possible in American society without terrorizing the American people on a scale not experienced before. And the BBC, on July 3rd, 2002, in a very important article by the BBC correspondent in Washington, Steve Kingstone, states the following. The only man charged in connection with the 11th of September attacks has asked to testify for the United States Congress. Zachariah Moussaoui states that he and the suspected hijackers were under full surveillance by this FBI prior to September 11th, and that the U.S. intelligence agencies allowed the attacks to happen. This is the latest in a series of handwritten motions from Mr. Moussaoui to the judge. He states, I have the relevant information, and I have the proof relating to the conduct and prior knowledge of the FBI before September. He has asked for the chance, the BBC reporter continues, to share this evidence with U.S. lawmakers who are holding hearings into intelligence failings leading up to the attacks. And the report continues that the statement by Massawi is a statement backed by what he calls documentation and evidence that he wants to present both to the court and to the United States Congress. And he states the FBI chose not to make any arrests of people they were monitoring because they wanted the 11th of September attacks to proceed, to provide the excuse to destroy Afghanistan. This is a quote from the BBC article about Massawi.
As a follow-up, Ralph, the court filings of Massawi, which are public record, the judge has ruled that they will be secret, and that the press, as you can see with the BBC going with these court filings, that the press will be, public will be denied access to the court filings of Massawi, a further degeneration of the so-called democratic rules of the United States.
Well, actually, Maya, it's instructive to note that immediately after 9/11, the National Security Agency, as reported in the Washington Post, ordered the shredding of all data and all documents pertaining to NSA material evidence bearing on September 11th. Shredded. And at that time, the rather instructive event occurred as reported in the Boston Globe. Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, oversaw the arrival in Venice Airport, Venice being the location of the flight schools run by the CIA intelligence-related Rudy Decker and Arnie Riethoff, where these so-called hijackers were brought from Hamburg to train. Jeb Bush, the governor of Florida, with a literal flotilla of rider rental vans, went from police station to police station in all the surrounding communities. They emptied those police stations of all their files and their investigative work on the movements of these suspected hijackers. They were taken into a 130...
C-130.
Yes, of course, a C-130 aircraft, and they were flown out of Florida. We're looking here at the apparatus of suppression of evidence, and bearing upon the request of Massawi to appear before the Senate in today's San Francisco Chronicle, an editorial called "Snooping on the Senators: The Erosion of Civil Liberties is Hitting Home for the United States Senate," and a disturbing sign of the times. The none of the targeted senators is fighting back. In an effort to track down information in the hands of senators about pre-September 11th intercepts as reported on CNN, the FBI is demanding that all 17 members of the Senate Intelligence Committee hand over all records of contacts with journalists. The agents are demanding their telephone logs, their memos, their visitor sign-in sheets, their appointment books, their emails, and any materials that may have indicated contact with the media, unquote. The request, the editorial continues, is far broader than required to chase down the origins of anyone's story. It is especially worrisome because the administration has not made a case that its disclosure would be harmful to national security. What we are looking at here is not just the terrorizing of the American people, but even the political spokespersons of the ruling class itself in Congress are being terrorized with the knowledge that any contact with the press about the massive evidence of prior knowledge and prior complicity of the intelligence agencies of the United States in the events of September 11th are not to be permitted.
And what do they have to hide? Quote, title of an article, "Did Terrorist Pilots Train at U.S. Military Schools?" On September 15th and September 17th, just days after the September 11th attacks, in the Washington Post, Newsweek, and Knight Ridder newspapers, full discussion that In addition to having been inducted into U.S. flight training programs by two Dutch-owned flight schools in Venice, Florida, the Rudy Dekker schools of which Ralph was speaking, as many as six of the so-called terrorists, including accused ringleader Mohammed Atta, received training at U.S. military facilities. Newsweek reported that, quote, U.S. military sources have given the FBI information that five of the alleged hijackers of the planes in Tuesday's terror attacks received training at secure U.S. military installations. And Knight Ritter was even more specific. It stated, quote, Mohammed Atta attended International Officers School at Maxwell Air Force Base in Montgomery, Alabama. Montgomery, Alabama. And Abdul Aziz Alamari attended the Aerospace School at Brooks Air Force Base in Texas. Saeed Aghmadi attended the Defense Language Institute, a Defense Department Language Institute in Monterey, California.
In addition to which, Mohammed Atta and these accused hijackers at one point gave their address at the United States Naval installation at Pensacola, Florida, and their connection to the training they received at Pensacola has been equally documented. These are people who were in schools of intelligence direction, military schools, which is absolutely impossible without a full intelligence clearance. These are operatives. These are people who were operating under the control, under the observation, under the direction of the United States intelligence agencies. The hands of intelligence are all over the events of 9/11, exactly as they were over the linchpin event, according to today's New York Times, the World Trade Center bombing of 1993.
What is it all about? We've again discussed, again and again, a war, permanent, perpetual war, conquest of the planet, of the resources of the planet, and also to prevent the social revolution of the peoples of the planet for control over their own lives. The Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific heard testimony from John J. Maresca, Vice President of International Relations of Unical Corporation, on February 12, 1998. And it's instructive to follow what they say. Mr. Baruta, presiding for the Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific, said, quote, I have a statement to make. 100 years ago, Central Asia was the arena for a great game played by Tsarist Russia, colonial Britain, and Napoleon's France, and the Persian and Ottoman empires. 100 years later, the collapse of the Soviet Union has unleashed a great game where the interests of the East India Trading Company have been replaced by those of UNICAL and SOCAL. This is the presiding representative for the Subcommittee on Asia and the Pacific speaking. And then when we hear from Maresca himself, he says, quote, the region's total oil reserves will reach more than 60 billion barrels of oil in the short term, and our estimates are as high as 200 billion barrels. In 1995, the region produced 870,000 barrels. By 2010, Western oil companies will increase this production to 4.5 million barrels a day, an increase of 500%. Our major problem, Maresca says, has yet to be resolved. How to gain control and to get the region's vast energy resources to markets where they are needed. They don't mince words. They state openly what they want. Quote, Maresca says, we are revisiting this agenda for Central Asia. We contemplate a pipeline south from Central Asia to the Indian Ocean. The only possible route is across Afghanistan, which presents its own unique challenges because the country is involved in bitter warfare for almost two decades and is divided by civil war. So what does Maresca say? Maresca says there must be control over Afghanistan. There must be stability over Afghanistan so that he can gain the confidence of government, lenders, and our company. What he says specifically, quote, we have made it clear that construction of this pipeline will not begin until a recognized government has been put in place that has the confidence of government, lenders, and our company. Profits, $5 trillion in the short term. War for oil, perpetual war, and now a war in Iraq. As Ralph has said, prior to September 11th, it was called Operation Noble Eagle. The plans of Secretary Rumsfeld, of Dick Cheney, first Afghanistan, then Iraq. As Air Force General Richard Myers, the chairman of the Joint Chief of Staff, stated on ABC this week in 2001, quote, he was asked whether at that time he had started to prepare targets in Iraq. Now remember, this is during the time of the invasion of Afghanistan, when the United States was claiming it had no intentions to go into Iraq. He said, quote, this is a global war on terrorism and weapons of mass destruction. Afghanistan is only one small piece. Of course, we are thinking very broadly. Since World War II, we haven't thought this broadly about a campaign. Ralph?
Osama bin Laden has been accused of being the mastermind and the architect of this supposed wave of terror against the United States. I say supposed because Osama bin Laden himself has made two important interviews, one with Umat in Pakistan, in which he went into detail about the attacks of September 11th, and in which he stated that he had no involvement in these. And the second was to the BBC. Quote, I have already said that I am not involved in the September 11 attacks in the United States. I had no knowledge of these attacks, nor do I consider the killing of innocent women, children, and other humans as an appreciable act. There exists a government within the government of the United States. That secret government must be asked as to who carried out these attacks. The United States should trace the perpetrators of these attacks to those persons who want to make this present century a century of conflict, so their own rulers can survive. This is a quote from the BBC of Osama bin Laden. Now, you will remember that the attribution to Osama bin Laden of responsibility for these events was based upon several videotapes which were orchestrated and presented by the United States government with great fanfare. But when we have examined these tapes, and when indeed experts have examined these tapes, they found that they were scissors and paste jobs. That indeed, the particular tape, which had him greeting people and supposedly celebrating the attack on September 11th, was a splice from a previous tape at a wedding ceremony taken more than a year previously, and the analyst in London who examined this established that this was a complete scissors and paste job. And this is not a question of romanticizing or reinventing Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden is a fundamentalist who was recreated by American intelligence for his operations in Afghanistan. But as Gul Hamid made clear, this is not the operation of a tiny little group operating out of a cave in Afghanistan, with every single communication of theirs monitored by the Promise hardware and the Echelon satellite spying apparatus of a sophisticated electronic capacity on the part of U.S. intelligence agencies. In the second tape, which was imputed to Osama bin Laden, a tape which was said to have been made with a blind sheikh visiting him from Saudi Arabia. According to the tape that is presented, the sheikh was visiting Osama bin Laden during the full moon at the time of Ramadan. The only problem is that the full moon was not in Afghanistan at the time that this visit was claimed, and that the entire route was under saturation bombing by B-52s, and there was no access to the location in question, as again, BBC and other experts established. What we are looking at here is an attempt to father upon a demonic figure from Saddam Hussein and Noriega and now to Osama bin Laden to create the environment for a perpetual war for oil, a perpetual war for the resources of the planet that our tiny ruling class requires and for which it needs a terrorized American public to acquiesce in its designs. This is a false flag operation, the details of which are elaborated in our documentation over a period of 1 year. We will continue with this critique. We will continue with this evidence. We will again detail the role of the Israeli Mossad with its 200 intelligence operatives who were fanning across the United States, with 60 of them located in Hollywood, Florida, two of them on the same, living on the same street as Mohammed Atta, monitoring his activities as Fox News has detailed in elaborated reports. This is a false flag operations, quote, in the most egregious instance, a dozen Israeli spies operating out of 4220 Sheridan Street, a block away from 3389 Sheridan Street, where Mohammed Atta was living, were monitoring his actions from day to day. Brothers and sisters, Sharon, Ariel Sharon, was instructed not to fly on the day that he was scheduled to fly, September 11th, he was due to come to New York. Like Willie Brown, like George Shultz, so with Ariel Sharon, prior knowledge of a false flag operation, the events of September 11th, the terrorizing of the American people, the predicate for the suppression of our liberties, and the vehicle for a Operation Northwoods-like vast apparatus of war, continuous war, and suppression at home.
As Helen Caldicott said just the other day, if the world were to spend $1,000 a minute since the birth of Christ up until this current moment, it would equal $1 trillion. $1 trillion, the defense budget of the United States, $500 billion, and more if you consider the intelligence operations and the vast military-industrial complex, $1,000 a minute. You've been listening to Taking Aim with
Ralph Schoenman
and Maya Schoen. You can reach us at takingaim@pacbell.net, PACBELL.net, or reach us by phone at 707-552-9995. We'll be with you next week.